You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on the brand new podcast app, Himalaya. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here, as always, with David Ramil, and we are continuing our exit interview series that we've been doing. We've gotten through a bunch of players. We're going to do Hassan Whiteside today. As usual, we'll go through the pros, the cons, and then ask some key questions about Hassan Whiteside's future. Let's start then, David, with the pros. Look, Whiteside's numbers this season were basically down across the board from the season prior, from all of the seasons in Miami. 12.3 points per game, 11.3 rebounds per game, 1.9 blocks per game. He only played 23 minutes per game. He played 25 last season, 32, almost 33 the season before that. So his minutes were down, his field goal attempts were down. All of those things were down. And I do think it was probably the best season Whiteside has ever had in Miami.
That's fair. I mean, he seemed like he was engaged. He wasn't a problem. You know, if we take back to where we were at the end of last season, where he was griping publicly through the media, particularly through Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald, about his playing time.
I'm going to talk about Barry Jackson later, but keep
good. Because no, that was a big part of it. Him being so public in a way that no Heat player has been in the 20-something years since Pat Riley joined this franchise. And so, he was disrupting everything. Like, this team was so precariously built on the idea that chemistry, depth, all these things were going to hold it together and power them through whatever deficiencies they may have as far as talent is concerned. And then all of a sudden, Hassan just throws a huge monkey wrench into the whole affair by publicly griping again for his playing time. So that was the last we had seen him before the start of this season. And then we saw a much more engaged version of him in preseason, where he just seemed like he was more focused on doing little things. I remember you and I recording a show and talking about screen setting in a positive way, something we haven't done for Hassan Whiteside ever, mm-hmm. I think, since he first joined the team. Even when he first joined the team, I don't think he was known as a particularly good screen setter, but that certainly deteriorated over the time, over his tenure with Miami. So, you know, it was a lot of positives there. I think we started to see some engagement. It was a little inconsistent. But at the same time, there was that stretch there when he came back after the birth of his child, where I think he seemed a little bit even more
engaged. Do you think that had a lot to do with it? I mean, people tend to mature when those kind of things happen. How much do you buy into that?
I think you kind of, it helps you focus a little bit. Even as you're going through the process of, you know, sleep deprivation and everything else, your focus, at least my focus, was, you know, somewhat singular. You know, there's a small child waiting for you back at home that needs your attention 100%. And so even as much as you fill it with the day-to-day activities of any normal adult, or in Hassan's case, you know, the day-to-day activities of an NBA player, I think it does help you focus a little bit. So I don't know. Maybe we're overstating it. Maybe it's just a feel-good narrative.
Well, maybe starting games, playing time, being in for the last 3 or 4 minutes of the fourth quarter, maybe that just doesn't matter as much to him anymore. Maybe his perspective has broadened a little bit. I mean, I think there's certainly something to that. He was a lot less selfish in the way that he played. He wasn't, I mean, you know, we've made fun of him about that push shot that he has. That was still part of his portfolio, but it wasn't as big a part of that portfolio as it had been in years past. You mentioned the screen setting thing. I do think also, look, Whiteside's 29 years old, and we kind of tend to think about him as this sort of young basketball player because he wasn't he was hardly in the league between the ages of 21 and 24, caught on with the Heat at 25, carries himself like a young guy. I mean, he's 29. He is like almost a decade older than Justice Winslow. And you just don't really think about that because he just carries himself like a young guy like that. He is very immature. You know, the perfect day for Hassan Whiteside would be waking up, having pancakes, and hanging out with DJ Khaled, you know?
Playing video games somewhere along the way.
Right, yeah, feeding his salmon or whatever they are. Koi fish?
Koi fish, yeah. That's right.
But he's 29. His skills are probably deteriorating. They're definitely deteriorating. He's not as athletic as he once was. You've mentioned that a lot. Like, the blocks aren't there like they were. I mean, there was that season, 2015-16, where he was averaging almost 4 blocks per game. And we remember we always used to talk about how fast he goes from the weak side to the strong side of the defense, how he's able to just, like, within a step be in the play between the player with the ball and the basket.
Yeah.
He was so fast with it. And we used to talk about how strong his hands were and all these things. And look, he's had a number of injuries, right? That's certainly a factor to his hands and to his knees and lower body and all these things. And I think that's taken a toll. But he's also 29, and he's 7 feet tall. And those guys tend to break down. And so maybe that, as we've seen, you know, an extreme example like Dwayne Wade, who learned that old man game and he's evolved 3 or 4 or 5 times throughout his career, Whiteside might be at this stage where he is starting to evolve a little bit and saying, like, look, I'm not getting 4 blocks per game. I'm not doing the triple-double with blocks thing anymore. I just don't have that in me anymore. And so if I'm going to stay on the court, I better learn how to set good screens. Maybe I'll take smarter shots and be a little bit more of an unselfish player, because that's what gets me on the court.
Now, he did have some, you know, fine-tuning along the way. Screen setting, certainly a part of it. But his rebounding rate was actually a career best. A total rebounding percentage, according to Basketball Reference, was a career high, 25.9%. Block rate wasn't too bad at 7.3, but, you know, significantly better than it was a year before. Still well short of that peak season that he had a couple of years ago back in 15-16 before he was awarded his contract. But so there were some things that he did well, and you know, he's still playing defense at a high level. He's still a factor defensively there. I think we kind of tend to overlook that because maybe there aren't a lot of steals. There aren't as many blocks as there once were, and so we kind of tend to overlook his defensive impact, although a lot of the metrics show how much of an impact he has defensively, and you know, that's the strength of his game. And then offensively, I don't think he was much of a problem as he's been in the past. You know, he shot less from, well, he shot more from 3-point range. You know, actually the mid-range shot was still something that he went to a little far too often, but he was knocking it down. I don't know. His usage rate
was 2 percentage points lower than it was last year. That was really big. And last year, I think, was like, yeah, his numbers were up there, but he did just seem to suck so much life out of the ball on the offensive end last season more than he did this year. So I think that was definitely a positive. And on the defensive side, his on-off court metrics, which have always been a problem despite averaging 4 blocks per game, and like the Heat were always better with him off the court defensively than they were when he was on the court. And that's when guys like Amari Stoudemire were backing him up, right? Or a Willie Reed was backing him up. This is the first year where those on-off stats tended to even out a little bit more. Now, he wasn't a giant positive on the defensive end like a Rudy Gobert might be, or Joel Embiid certainly is, and things like that. But it was about even. And look, there's a lot of noise in on-off numbers because it does matter, like, who you're on the floor with, who the backup is. And in this case, the backup was probably the best defensive center he's ever been on the roster with in Bam Adebayo, right? And so the Heat were a lot better when Bam was on the floor defensively, according to their on-off numbers. And Whiteside was still about even, which leads me to think that Whiteside was even more impactful than his advanced metrics and those on-off metrics would lead you to believe, that at least what they show on paper. Because again, his backup was such a stud defensively that those on-off numbers are going to be a little skewed in favor of Bam than versus Whiteside. And again, Whiteside was basically par.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, though, and it feels like the natural progression into discussing his cons, because I'm thinking over his season here, and I don't know that there was anything like that stood out as a glaring improvement, and that kind of feels like it's a natural segue then for us to discuss what's wrong with him. But.
And into this ad read that we've got to do here, because if you want to naturally improve your home security system deal thing, whatever you've got going on, you can improve it with Wyze. Wyze is the indoor camera that does it all. Wyze is packed with premium features that allows you to see everything from anywhere for just $20. Check on your home anytime with the Wyze app live stream in 1080p, full HD. Images so clear that you won't miss a thing. Wyze's mission is to create amazing smart home products that are available and affordable to everyone. And best of all, Wyze provides free rolling 14-day cloud storage and without any subscription, and it's just $20 a camera. Again, $20 a camera. Easily check in on your kids or monitor your home in the middle of the workday. Whatever reason that you need it, Wyze can help. Go to Wyze.com/lock to get the guaranteed lowest price. That's Wyze.com, Wyze/locked. All right, let's talk about the cons, David, because you're right. There wasn't anything glaring, but there was one specific thing that was really, really bad, and that was his free throw percentage. He just, Hassan Whiteside who had been surprisingly good from the free throw line. We used to, oh, look, like he's shooting, you know, 60%, 70% from the free throw line for a 7-footer. Like, he's got surprisingly good touch, and we kind of always egged him on, like, maybe take a 3-pointer every game. Like, why couldn't he do that? The mid-range isn't that bad when it's in the flow of the offense. But this year, 45% from the free throw line. It was just he just completely forgot how to shoot this season, and that was a tremendous problem with him, especially in trying to get him in at the end of games. Teams started to hack him a little bit in the middle of the season. That started happening. That was, he was just in all the ways that he wasn't a liability anymore. Now all of a sudden, the free throw thing was a liability.
Yeah, here's the counter to him possibly being more focused as a result of his new fatherhood status. You know, this is the exact opposite of that. It's clearly a psychological thing, like that it manifests somewhat physically because he alters his form or his shot or something like that. That's not a factor. The reality is that it's in his head. It's in his head that that this is a problem for him.
So you don't think that his arms are tired from just holding this newborn all the time?
I'm pretty sure that's not it. No. I don't know. I don't know who the mom is, but I'm sure she's doing her fair share of holding. Either way, I'm sure that Hassan's strong enough. You know, we've seen him flex way too many times for us to question whether or not holding an 8-pound child is tiring at the free throw line. And
he's really into biceps and chest day at the gym.
Yes.
He's really into it.
and I think these problems were there even before the baby was born. So we can't blame the baby 100%. Sorry, Heat fans. 45% from a 70% rate and the same free throw attempts per game from the previous season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's shooting 3.5 attempts per game, which isn't a whole heck of a lot. But in this case, that's probably a good thing considering he's only knocking down 45%. This is the inverse of DeAndre Jordan, who's you know, picked up his free throw shooting recently as a result of his career arc. But, you know, Hassan's going in the other route, and I don't know what it is. I mean, we've seen even a great shooter, or at least a much better shooter in LeBron James, constantly tweak his free throw. Like, there was that season when Ray Allen was here and he was having him do different things. He was having LeBron do different things at the line, and it seemed to translate well. And then, you know, that kind of changed because he just wants to mess with it somehow. And I think we're starting to see a little bit from that from Hassan too. There was the jump shot free throw form, which to me still looks like the best, but he didn't want to go to that. I don't know if somebody insulted him for it or said it looks like he looks like a doofus or something like that. Like, he's at a point now.
I think maybe part of that is he's got those lingering knee issues. Maybe that's part of it.
Wear and tear.
If you're doing 3 to 4 free throw attempts a game, maybe it's just like over the course of an 82 game season. Maybe that's just one way to lessen the wear and tear. I wouldn't be surprised if the Heat trainers told him. And that's not a bad idea.
No, if that's what it is, and I hadn't considered that, I'm sure that's fine. I mean, but we're talking about 3.5 attempts per game. Do you think it's really that much?
I don't know. I mean, what's 4 times 82? That seems like a big number.
I guess you're right.
So he should, I mean, how much would you pay just to see Whiteside next season start doing an underhand?
Yes, I was just going to say that. We've been doing this show too long. Absolutely. Like, he's at that point now, and he spoke about his maturity/immaturity. Can we do the Rick Barry? Can he finally take that on? Because I think he could pull it off. Like, no one's really going to talk smack to him at 7 feet tall. And he's such a big doofus anyway. He's so playful in his doofus nature. Yeah, he's great at it.
He could just laugh every time after. He's like, hey, it went in.
Yeah, it's not like we're expecting much anyway. I mean, it's only 4 times per game. It would be perfect. And if he starts connecting on these at 60, 70, 80%, that would be great. I mean, it works.
I mean, yeah, I said his stats were down from 14 to 12.3 points per game. If he just starts converting his free throws at his average clip, then all of a sudden those stats go back to career average, if not better. Yeah. So, yeah, that could be one way to just get back there. As far as other cons, that was really, again, that's only the glaring thing there. We actually like to see him starting fewer games. He played 72 games versus 54 the season before, so he does seem healthier. I think the fewer minutes help that. Going against backups for the last 20 games of the season probably helped him stay on the court longer, or for, you know, through the end of the year. But there was a noticeable difference in his overall athleticism this year, I think more so than we could say from any other season. And that's just sort of a generic con there that, you know, but it's worth monitoring. Again, at 29 years old, how much longer can Whiteside play at this level? Whatever level this is, and it's far from elite. It's far from top 5 center in the league, but he is productive, right? He's productive. But those big games where he's scoring like 25 points and getting, you know, 15, 16, 17 rebounds a game, fewer and further in between, right? Mm-hmm. He just wasn't, he didn't have these monster box scores out of him as much as in seasons past. So you just got to wonder, you know, I said during the Rakeli Olynyk exit interview that I thought Whiteside still had this ability to raise Miami's ceiling, that in any given moment, he could be Miami's easiest route to a basket on any given offensive possession just because of his size and strength and overall athleticism. But if that keeps waning, how much longer can Whiteside play at that level? Again, something that the Heat have to monitor.
It's not like he is a go-to option. I don't know that they're necessarily creating a lot of offense for him or that they're calling a number of plays for Hassan, even if it's just to get him engaged once he does eventually come in off the bench. That chemistry, here's another factor. The chemistry with Dwayne Wade, you know, I think Wade made it an active part of his you know, approach to each game to try and get Hassan going. He said as much, but I think you certainly see it. It's clearly evident there when he goes and he tosses a lob right away to kind of get Hassan going a little bit. What happens now with Dwayne Wade gone? Like, I know we're probably stepping ahead here, but what happens next to Hassan as he's coming off the bench? Who is going to be that person to try and help Hassan reach another level of his play?
Somebody's got to step up. Justice Winslow seems like the most likely candidate because he plays at a similar speed to Dwayne Wade. Dion and Dragic like to, you know, play a little bit faster.
Yeah.
So maybe that's not going to quite work with Whiteside's, his more methodical, I guess. Methodical doesn't seem like the right word to use in the context of
plotting.
Whiteside. But you know what I mean. Plotting is good. Plotting is very good. But let's talk about some other key questions about Whiteside's future. We'll do that after this break. You're listening to Locked On Heat. All right, key questions about his future. That's how we are going to end our exit interview with Hassan Whiteside. Let's start with, I think the biggest elephant in the room is, will he be happy being a backup next season? In other words, did he accept this bench role because he had that injury and the Heat probably sold him a little bit on, look, we just don't want to mess up what we've got going here. We're in a good groove. We've won 8 straight games or whatever that was, you know, towards the end of the year then. Let's just keep bringing you off the bench. Then let's talk about this next. Let's talk about during the summer. Like, let's just not screw up what we got going right now. We're in the middle of a playoff push. Let's talk about your role going forward next summer. We'll have a good dialogue about it.
Hmm.
What does that dialogue look like? You and I agree. Bam Adebayo, I think everybody that really watched the Heat critically agrees, Bam Adebayo should be the starter moving forward. Will Whiteside be cool with that?
You know, his comments at the end of the season were that he wanted to play, that he wasn't sure if he was going to take the opt-out as far as his contract is concerned. Those are a little concerning. He averaged the same number of minutes as Bam did, 23.3 minutes per game, but I guess those probably don't reflect the game, you know, probably changed for him towards the second half of the season where Bam probably played more minutes and Hassan played less, so I wonder if that was just kind of balancing out there. You know, even on that roster, he was only the ninth or, you know, tied for eighth as far as total minutes per game. So that's a concern. Does he want to play more? Would he be happy playing 26 minutes off the bench as opposed to playing maybe 18 minutes or 19 or 20 minutes as a starter?
Mm.
He strikes me as being the type of person that wants to start. Like, he likes the ego stroke that comes with starting. And I don't
have
think
his name called out.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think he cares so much about the closing. I mean, he said that he does. But I think the starting means more to him, which is like something that most players kind of say the inverse of. So I'm a little surprised, but I feel like that anyway. This is my supposition, is that he probably just wants the notoriety that comes with starting, going up against your big name guys like Rudy Gobert rather than Derek Favors or whomever else, you know. So
he does seem to relish those matchups. And look, it's hard to make an All-Star game, and it'd be really hard to win Defensive Player of the Year
coming off the bench
if you're a backup. Right. Yeah, it's just that there's a certain thing with that. At some point, there's got to be a dose of reality with this guy. He's going to be turning 30, right? And it's and he's going to take, what, $27 million? He's going to leave that on the table to go find a starting job making half that somewhere else if he's lucky? I don't know. I do think the best-case scenario for Miami, quite honestly, and this is sort of touching on our next key question, but would be if he just would opt out and try to find a starting job elsewhere. But if he's making $27 million to come off the bench and play 20 minutes a game, 23 minutes a game, that's fine. But that does lead us into this other option, right, where, and this is something that Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald, who we like, but I don't know what this crusade is with him trying, like, publishing in the Miami Herald, things like this. I'm sorry. Like, starting Whiteside and Bam Adebayo together, he wrote that as a key takeaway from the season in a column that he just had, was that all these other things were absolutely right, that you can't rely on depth instead of top-end talent. Don't give out four-year deals for role players. Just nailing all these things. Yes, 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 absolutely. But then gets to this thing where Whiteside and Bam need to be playing together. He asked Pat Riley about it at the press conference. This is bad propaganda from the Miami Herald. I don't know what this is. He's like, oh, Spo barely even tried it. He only played him like 16 minutes this season or something like that. You want to know why he didn't try it? Because it's insane. You don't play Whiteside and Bam Adebayo. We know everything that we need to know about those guys. Oh, they could dominate the boards. Cool. You know who also was top five or top six in rebounds this season? The Lakers. They sucked. So I don't get this thing. You know that I'm very anti-rebounding. Rebounding is a loser stat. I've always said that. If you count your rebounds, you're losing. I'll let you take it from here.
I think part of it is Barry trying to stay in both Hassan's good graces and also the front offices. Like, I don't think he wants to be critical of Pat Riley's decision to throw that kind of money. And I think there's another part of it, too, is that Barry's probably a little bit older as far as his approach to the game. And he probably thinks, like a lot of people, that it takes a big man to win. You know, we're not too far removed from the era in which Alonzo Mourning and P.J. Brown were manning the starting lineup there. So it kind of makes sense to try and duplicate that with Bam Adebayo and Hassan Whiteside if you think that still works. But the reality is it's a completely different league.
He asked Josh Richardson or somebody, I think it was Richardson, about the idea of, and Richardson's like, well, we would dominate the boards. It's like, what is Josh going to say? No? Hell no?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's like, he had to say one thing nice. He never said, oh, I think we'd be a better team. Oh, could you imagine us defensively? He didn't say any of that stuff. He's like, yeah, I guess we'd like be pretty, like we'd be even better. And by the way, the Heat were a top 10. They were 10th in rebounding this year. It's not like they sucked at rebounding either. They were just fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I
look, I'm not trying to come off as like media against media right now, but we do have to hold people accountable at some point. And this is
a bad take.
Borderline. It's a bad take, and it's borderline malpractice because are we really going to try to get Heat fans to want Whiteside and Bam? Like, cause that's the only point of writing a column, is to influence the people who are reading that column. Do we really want to start getting Heat fans to think that Whiteside and Bam out of bio should have, aren't we smarter than this? This is the team that put Chris Bosh at center. Didn't we come a long way, and now all of a sudden we're going to play Adebayo and Whiteside so that we could score 75 points a game? Is that really what we want to do?
I think your casual fan, I've long said this, I think your casual fan still thinks Hassan Whiteside is the answer, because those blocks do make a lot of noise, and I think that's what you see. This is probably a little older, maybe a little bit more conservative as far as the basketball fandom is concerned, not a lot into analytics. They probably agree with Charles Barkley when he questions why people shoot threes and why people, all these analytics geeks and all this stuff. I mean, I think there is a large swath of fan in every fan base that kind of feels that way. But when it comes to Miami, it manifests in a belief that Hassan Whiteside is the answer. And it's just not the case. When you have 29 other centers, and probably more when you count backups, that are capable of being a versatile player that can make passes, that can do different things. I mean, look, we've long said this. Al Horford was available as a free agent that same summer as Hassan Whiteside, and he's thrived in 2 years since with the Boston Celtics. I can only imagine what would have happened if Miami had been able to acquire Horford instead of...
Horford might be the best option in the East to defend Giannis. That's kind of where we're at with Horford. Whiteside, meanwhile... Let's talk about Whiteside. That actually leads us into our next question and our last question here. What's his trade value right now? Because if he doesn't opt out, look, as much as Barry Jackson wants to write that Whiteside should be starting with Adebayo, I do think that the Heat front office is smarter than this, and yeah. I think that's evidenced by the fact that they started Bam Adebayo at the end of the year. They're going to try to shop Whiteside. They've tried to shop him before. They don't love that contract. A little bit of buyer's remorse there. I think they're going to try to shop it, and just like I said at the top, lower usage, lower numbers across the board, probably the best season he's had as a Heat player. Do you think he's helped his trade value? Because again, I do think other front offices aren't, like, they didn't trade for him when he had four blocks per game. Whiteside's trade value is nothing the last few years. Other front offices are smart, if not smarter than the Heat's front office. I think they see Whiteside on an expiring contract as a potential value add But I do wonder what kind of value that he could get, if anything, for Whiteside in a trade.
I think it might have, his value may have improved incrementally, like just a very small amount, just because of the fact that it's an expiring deal. That's the only reason why it would be beneficial to anybody, because I'm trying to imagine any team that could actually benefit from acquiring him. And as far as Miami's motivations for it, they'd be taking on, look, Barry, to his credit, wrote, you know, a piece on what kind of contracts could be gotten in exchange for Hassan Whiteside in a trade. A lot of those were pretty bad. You know, Nick Batum.
Yeah, I didn't like that take either. I don't think that's the reality either. Because, the Heat could probably trade Whiteside for Nick Batum, but there's no way in hell that they would do that. So it would probably be an expiring for an expiring or, and I just want to float this out to you, right? Joel Embiid, not the healthiest dude, right? Big plotting center, already missed a playoff game. When he's out there, he's amazing, but he's not always out there. We've seen Philadelphia try to find insurance for Joel Embiid in the past. They've got one in Boban right now. Boban has not lasted long in any one stop. He's very, very limited. They signed Greg Monroe. Greg Monroe started a playoff game.
He did.
They could really use a backup center. And Hassan Whiteside would make a lot of sense. Would make a lot of sense as a backup center there, especially if Jimmy Butler is going to walk away and you're going to get nothing in return for Jimmy Butler.
Yes.
A sign and trade?
Yes. Please.
Jimmy Butler for Whiteside? Would that not be the greatest steal in Miami Heat history? That would be the greatest trade in Heat history as far as value for value.
I mean, that would be smoothly done by Pat Riley in the front office. For all the criticism he's taken from us and others, that would be an amazing, that would be an incredible piece of work. I think you get your star player, you get somebody who takes over in Dwayne's absence. I mean, and you move Hassan's contract, which, you know, is probably for a benefit to him. Like, I think even with being Joel Embiid's backup, as much as it'll be a problem for him, I mean, that would really stick in his craw. But I think it would highlight him in a way that maybe being in Miami won't. Like, he'll certainly be on a much larger media platform being Joel Embiid's backup, and I think that'll help him immensely. And like you pointed out astutely, Embiid's going to miss games. So for Hassan to come in there and start and take over, and for people to say, you know what, Hassan's not too bad in Embiid's absence, that would really be a big plus for him. And again, more people will be watching that team that could potentially compete for a national title next year. So I think it'll help him when he enters free agency in 2020.
Might not be the best deal for Philly, you know, like, no. It depends on what happens with Ben Simmons.
Yeah, it's a waste of money on their perspective, I think.
Let's not tell them that, though.
I think they know. I think Elton Brand is aware of that.
I don't know.
You know, Elton Brand, who always wanted to play for Miami and was in sign that offer sheet.
Can we trade Whiteside for Elton Brand?
2003 Elton Brand? Yes, in a heartbeat.
No, 2019 Elton Brand. What do I care? It's fine.
Oh, man. Elton Brand, he was almost close to being a Heat player.
Yeah. A couple times, right? I mean, he signed the offer sheet that one time. Like, that was the real... But he kind of bounced around the league a little bit there at the end.
Yeah, he was always one of those names. I think even towards the end of his career, like with the big three, I think he was always one of those guys who could have been a backup to Eric Dampier.
There was a couple of guys. Elton Brand. I know Richard Jefferson was really close at one point. There's a couple guys that would have been kind of fun on those big three Heat teams. But whatever. Two titles in 4 years is not bad. Let us know what you think about everything we're talking about now, especially about Hassan Whiteside for our mailbag. For later in the week, get that in. LockedOnHeat@gmail.com or on Twitter @LockedOnHeat. Thanks for listening. Remember that you could subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. When you get in your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Heat hands-free just to listen to us. Thank you for spending some time with us today. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.